This is Community Voices on 91.9 UIS. I'm co-host Randy Eccles. There's a date coming up. This one is Earth Day. And on April 24th, our guest today will be presenting about Emequon. Welcome, Randy Smith. Tell us what you do.
My title is I'm the Illinois River Project Director for the Nature Conservancy. So the Nature Conservancy is a global conservation not-for-profit. We do work all over the world and all throughout Illinois. We've got a bunch of staff here. My work focuses on the Illinois River, the floodplain associated with it, and the wetlands in those places, all of the fish and wildlife and people that depend on those places.
Are you based out at Emequon?
I am. Yep. We have an office at our Emequon Preserve. Most days it's a great place to work and be immersed in nature.
Is that where UIS's field station is too?
Yep. It's just right adjacent to our building. They have a great facility and it's a great partnership with the two buildings and all the folks associated with them right next to each other.
For someone who might not have been out the way, can you give a little more specific location where Emequon is?
We are right between Havana and Lewistown along the Illinois River. It's on the Fulton County side of the river, so the address is Lewistown. This is a almost 7,000-acre site located in the Illinois River floodplain. The Illinois River runs just on the east side of the preserve. We've done a lot of work to restore a lot of the natural habitats that would have existed here prior to conversion to agriculture and things like that.
Why is it significant that Emequon exists?
The Illinois River, going back historically to let's say like the early 1900s or late 1800s, was one of the most ecologically productive streams in North America. It produced a ton of fish. It was the most productive inland commercial fishery. Is incredibly important for mussels. It was the most productive freshwater mussel stream in North America. It supported lots and lots of waterfowl and other migratory birds during migration periods. We know that folks have occupied this place for at least 600 generations, drawn to the abundance of resources that were here. Folks also figured out that the soils in the floodplain were incredibly fertile and that if they could get the water off of the landscape, that became really, really productive farm grounds. And it still is very productive farm ground. Most of the floodplain land is in agriculture yet. Emequon was the jewel of this system. In a very highly productive system, the wetlands that made up Emequon work the best of the best. Around 1920, the property was levied off, so disconnected from the river with an earthen levee. The wetlands were drained and it was farmed for about 80 years. And that included a cattle feedlot and all of the various infrastructure that would go along with a massive commercial operation. In a lucky turn of fate, the property really remained in one owner for almost the entire time it was farmed. It changed hands several times, but was really just one owner. In 2000, the property came up for sale. The Nature Conservancy stepped in and made the purchase. A lot of planning went into how to begin restoration, so that took a couple of years, and restoration began in about 2007, with the biggest step being turning off the pumps that had kept the site dry for about 80 years, allowing water to return to the landscape. The resiliency of nature immediately came roaring back. All the plant life returned, mostly on its own. Animals and fish communities responded accordingly.
Was there a levee that had to be dismantled?
The levee is still in place. That is one of the really neat features about this place is that over those 80 years, a lot of the sites along the Illinois River that were not protected by levees became really degraded. The river got messed up in a variety of ways. The reversal of the Chicago River, sending a lot of bad stuff downstream, the disconnection of the river from its floodplain with these levees, commercial navigation going in throughout the river, as well as landscape conversion throughout the entire watershed of the river. That concentrated all of the nasty things, the sediments, the nutrients, the invasive species into these remaining floodplain wetlands. They're in pretty poor shape in a lot of places. Some of them are still great. Some of them have a lot of ecological potential left. Most of them are certainly degraded. This place being protected from all of those things going down the river was almost like a little time capsule. So a lot of the high quality plant species that we really don't see other places in the river valley, that seed bank was still here in Emequon despite 80 years of intensive agriculture. And those things all came roaring back quickly. That said, our goal is to not just have this one really cool, really high quality site. We want to impact to the entire river system. And so we have breached the levee in a managed way. So we have a water control structure that allows us to move water between the river and the wetland. We do have pumps in case we have more water than we need. We can still get rid of them. We are still an active drainage and levee district, so we have to be careful that we don't impact any of our neighbors' operations who are still farming their ground. We can now move water between kind of the two systems, the river proper and the wetland, and allow for that exchange of nutrients and species and all of those things that are really important to help the health of the river and to help the health of the backwaters.
This is Community Voices on 91.9 UIS. We're speaking with Randy Smith of the Nature Conservancy. He's out at Amaquan and is going to be doing a presentation coming up April 24th for Earth Day celebration at the Hoagland Center for the Arts. That's going to be going on that night. Starts at 5:30 with the social hour and the presentations at 7. What are you going to tell us?
A history of the river, a history of the site, just getting a brief overview today. And we'll kind of take a deep dive into this stuff, talk about why these things are important. Lots and lots of pictures throughout the restoration and currently get into just kind of scratching the surface of some of our science and monitoring, some of the restoration work that's gone on and all the cool stuff that's associated with the site over the years.
Is Amaquan open to the public?
Absolutely. We have a public use area that is right off Highways 7897, so relatively easy to get to. We're about an hour from Springfield, about an hour from Peoria, about an hour and a half from Bloomington Normal. We've got a lot of interpretive information, talks about the history of the river and the history of the site and all the species that depend on it, about a mile and a half of walking trails, a raised viewing platform, all kinds of good stuff. And we are open 365 days a year from during all daylight hours. We also do have a Facebook group in case there ever is a closure. So, for instance, we're planning some prescribed fire in that area coming up soon. We anticipate a couple hours of closure of that public access area.
Sounds like a really cool place to check out, and looking forward to hearing more about it April 24th at the Hoagland. When you look at rivers like the Illinois River, is there a need for more of this restoration like Amaquan, or is this just more of a science site?
Certainly a need for more. You know, in Illinois, we've lost over 90% of our pre-settlement wetlands. A lot of those were associated with our big rivers throughout the state. We would argue that, of course, more wetlands on the ground, as well as an increase in quality of the existing wetlands. And a lot of these river systems, the Mississippi and the Illinois in particular, there's still a lot of wetlands out there. That degradation has reduced their quality and their functionality to the species that rely on them, whether that's fish or wildlife or people.
Did I hear correctly that once in geological history, the Mississippi ran through the Illinois River Valley?
Yeah, that's right. Yep, that's a really neat kind of unique feature of it, that the last glaciation pushed the Mississippi from the Illinois Valley west to its current path, stranding this much smaller stream in this really large floodplain. When flooding occurred, it created a tremendous amount of that floodplain habitat for the size river that it was. So, yep, that's a really unique feature of this system. The habitats that we have within Amaquan are quite rare in the river valley. Most wetlands in the river valley don't have any submerged aquatic vegetation. So those are the plants that are rooted in the bottom that live underwater. There's a lot of species that rely on that type of habitat. Fish species in particular for like brood rearing habitat and homes for the larval fish and whatnot. And then there's just a ton of production that goes along with that. So in terms of like zooplankton and phytoplankton and a lot of these small fish, larval fish, that is their primary food source. So when we flow water out to the river, we send a lot of fish out into the river and a lot of good fish. So a lot of like our sport fishes that folks are interested in. So bass and crappie and bluegill and things like that. Those species are all doing quite well in Amaquan. It's not that there's exactly an abundance, but we produce a lot. When we flow water out, a lot of those go out into the river. And so that is helping the whole system.
Have you had any issues with invasive species like the Asian carp?
Of course, yeah. So that is a constant battle, both animals like the Asian carps, as well as plants. You know, we have a crew of on-the-ground habitat stewards throughout the year are battling a variety of different plant invasive species. A lot of those wetlands, some of those upland, and then yeah, the Asian carp. That's a great story. Maybe I'll get into it at the Hoagland event. They got in. They do not breed in Amaquan, but they do grow at a tremendous pace because of how productive the system is. We're working on a variety of ways of trying to reduce that. So through commercial fishing, as well as some experimental capture techniques and things like that. And we are happy to be kind of the research lab for a lot of these wetland systems. So it's hard to work in a lot of these places. We're happy to try to facilitate that as much as we can. We also understand that zeros are data too. So when things don't work out, that's a big issue, is learning what works and what doesn't. We're okay with something not going well here and understanding that, so that we don't have to try it at other places and expend a lot of limited resources trying something over and over again that we now know isn't as effective as maybe some other things.
You said earlier how the Illinois River was impacted by the reversal of the Chicago River, which was to hopefully clean up the drinking water of Chicago and Lake Michigan, but that just meant it came down this way. It also, though, connected the Great Lakes and the Atlantic through the Illinois to the Mississippi and down to the Gulf of Mexico. How important is that travel, that transportation pathway to the Illinois River?
Commercially, it's a huge deal, right? I mean, we see the inland shipping industry, so like the commercial barge industry, that's a critical link for them. Things moving up and down the rivers, you know, grain in particularly. I can't remember what percentage of grain in North America moves along the Illinois River, but it's significant. Maybe the downside of that, of course, not just the pollutants coming downstream from now having a multi-million person city in your headwaters, which is a pretty unique situation for a river, but then also the species that now can travel between those waterways that were formerly disconnected. We see things like zebra mussels move downstream in the Illinois. We also see things like Asian carp, we now have a large concern over, moving upstream potentially into the Great Lakes, which we're certainly trying to avoid.
In Chicago, they've tried to make the river more swimmable and used for recreation. Is that helping with the quality of the Illinois River downstream?
Absolutely. Any sort of efforts like that, we see a positive change downstream. These systems are, we often refer to wetlands as like the kidneys of the world, or nature's kidneys. They do a great job of filtering out pollutants, taking up a lot of those excess nutrients and things like that. But if we can start with a lower concentration, they're going to be more effective. More of those things are going to be filtered from the system, and the water moving downstream is all going to be better. We can maybe get to a certain point in water quality. If we start at a concentration of 10, maybe we can get it to a 6 before it moves downstream. But if we only start at a 6, then it's going to be in way better shape moving downstream.
This is Community Voices. We're talking with Randy Smith of the Nature Conservancy. He is going to be speaking for Earth Day at the Hoagland Center for the Arts, April 24th, a 5:30 social and a 7 o'clock presentation. Randy, are you from Illinois to start?
I grew up in Wisconsin and attended, my undergrad was at University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point, but then I've been in Illinois since about 2004 for graduate school at SIU Carbondale, and then have been in the Havana-Lewistown area ever since. Started working on Emaquan shortly after the restoration began in 2007 when I was with another research entity, the Illinois Natural History Survey, and have kind of had my feet wet in the place ever since.
We appreciate what you do. How did you get yourself into this area of study?
I have always been drawn to the outdoors and to nature. I am really interested in waterfowl and other wetland birds and wetland habitats. And so I am a waterfowl biologist by trade. Waterfowl and wetland research is kind of where I got my start. Was the state waterfowl biologist with Illinois DNR for about 10 years. Always stayed close to Emaquan. I live nearby Emaquan. Jumped at the opportunity when the director position here became available.
If you are talking to somebody younger thinking about getting into this, any advice for them?
We talk about these things all the time because we hire some early career folks as our stewardship team and work with technicians in other places. So learn as much as you can, talk to folks that are in positions like this, get experience. And that's not just a formal experience with a conservation entity, but just getting out and learning to do kind of basic things that we maybe take for granted, like run a weed eater, run a lawnmower, run a tractor, be comfortable driving an ATV, learning some of your birds, being comfortable using binoculars and spotting scopes, understanding, you know, kind of some of these habitat systems and things like that. Education is really important, but so is that field experience component of it. And the combination of those two things can lead people to a lot of success.
How have the changes at the federal level affected you?
It can be challenging depending on what we're doing. You know, luckily, we don't have federal funding. not any that we rely on at for our program specifically, but partners and things like that, it can be a challenge for them, certainly. Yeah, I'm not going to put words in their mouth at all or anything like that.
We've talked with so many museums and nonprofits and higher ed institutions, et cetera, that have found defunding being a challenge lately. So that was really the reach out there, is to see that you guys are doing okay. Anything else you'd like to leave us with?
Come and visit Emequan, and come and visit more than once. The place is ever changing. A couple of weeks ago, we had several hundred thousand snow geese. That was quite a spectacle. I know those show up on Lake Springfield from time to time as well. The birding can be exceptional. The fishing can be exceptional. You know, we have public fishing access as the weather warms and whatnot. Folks are really excited to get out after crappie and catfish and all of those sorts of things. And we're happy to host them. I guess just a couple notes. We do not allow gas motors to even be on the boat at our site. So it's trolling motor or paddle power only. And we do require a lake access waiver that can be picked up at Dixon Mounds Museum, which is adjacent to the site. And we're hopeful to have that, an online version of that, soon as well, hopefully before this kind of recreation season gets off and running.
Great timing to get ready for a trip as it gets warmer out there, and look forward to seeing Emequan, but also look forward to seeing you April 24th at the Hoagland Center for the Arts. There'll be a social starting at 5:30 with a presentation by you at 7 o'clock. Randy Smith of the Nature Conservancy, stationed out at Emequan, thanks for joining us today on Community Voices.
Thanks for having me, Randy.